Chapter 15. Gentleman Johnny Marcone was the most powerful figure in Chicago's criminal underworld. If there was an illegal enterprise afoot, Marcone was either in charge of it or had been paid for the privilege of its operating in his territory. Bony Tony had done most of a dime in a federal penitentiary for trafficking in narcotics, and after that, he'd moved into less politically incorrect areas of the business. He mostly dealt in moving stolen goods, everything from jewels to hot furniture. I wasn't exactly sure where Bony Tony ranked in Marcone's criminal hierarchy, but Marcone wasn't the sort of person who would take the murder of one of his people lightly, not without his approval, at any rate. Marcone would know about Bony Tony's death soon, if he didn't already. He was sure to get involved in one fashion or another, and the best way for him to get to whoever had killed Bony Tony would be to get his hands on whatever it was they wanted. I had to get Butters somewhere safe, the quicker the better. But until I knew what was on that storage device, I couldn't judge what would be safe for him and what wouldn't. "Harry," Butters said, as if he was repeating himself. I blinked a couple of times. "What?" "Do you want to hang on to this?" he said in the same tone. He stepped over to me and offered me the little slip of plastic. "No," I snapped and took two steps back. "Butters, get that the hell away from me." He froze in place, staring at me, his expression somewhere between confused and wounded.
"I'm sorry."
I took a deep breath. Where the hell was my concentration? This was no time to start spacing out on trains of thought, no matter how relevant to the circumstances. "Don't be," I said. "Look, that thing doesn't have any moving parts, right? Electronic storage?"
"Yeah."
"Then I don't dare touch it," I said. "Remember how messed up my x-rays were?" He nodded.
"You're saying that the data on here could get messed up the same way?"
"I could never have cassette tapes after I started working magic," I said. "They'd just fade away into static after a while. The magnetic strips on my credit card stopped working in a day or two." Butters chewed on his lip and nodded slowly.
"The data on the jump drive would be even more fragile than a magnetic strip. It might make sense if it was some kind of erratic electromagnetic field around you. Every human body gives off a unique field of electromagnetic energy. It could be like with your cell replication, that your field is more..."
"Butters," I said, "no time for that now. The important thing is that I don't dare touch that toy." I frowned, thinking out loud. "Or take it back to my place, either. The wards keep magic out, but they keep it in, too. It would probably fry it to hang around in there for too long. Even working any heavy energy around it could be dangerous."
"Well, that's stupid," Butters said. "I mean, storing important wizard information on something that getting close to a wizard would destroy."
"It's not stupid if you want to sell it to a wizard and you're worried the buyer might off you instead of dealing in good faith," I said. Butters looked at the corpse and then back at me.
"You think Gravain killed Bony Tony?"
"Yeah," I said. "But Gravain knew that he couldn't get to the information on that jump drive on his own." Butters swallowed.
"Which explains why he needed me."
"Yeah." I chewed on my lip for a second and then said, "Get Bony Tony back in the fridge. We're leaving." Butters nodded and went back to the examining table. He threw the cloth over the corpse.
"Where?"
"Can you read that thing here?"
"No," Butters said. "This computer is too old. It has the wrong ports. We could go to one of the other offices, maybe."
"No, we need to get out of here. Now."
"We could go to my place," Butters suggested.
"No, Gravain will definitely have it under surveillance. Damn it."
"Why damn it?"
"We're short on options, and that means we have to go someplace I didn't want to go."
"Where?"
he asked. "A friend's. Come on."
"Right,"
Butters said, and promptly walked over to his polka suit. He heaved up a couple of pieces. The cymbals clashed tinnily against one another. "What are you doing?" I demanded. "We've got to go."
"I'm not leaving it here for God knows what to mess with," Butters said.
He grunted and threw a strap awkwardly over his shoulder. The bass drum rumbled. "Yes, you are," I said. "We're not taking it with us. We don't have time for this." Butters turned to face me, his expression stricken.
That stupid POCA suit filled up most of the back of the SUV. It was a pain to move it without making a bunch of noise, but in the end, we managed to slip out the back door of the Forensic Institute and make a clean getaway. I watched the road behind us carefully until I was sure that it wasn't being followed. Then I headed for the campus area and Billy's apartment. I pulled into the apartment's parking lot, leaned out, and yelled, "Hey!" A young man with arms and legs a few sizes too large to match his body appeared from behind the corner of the building, frowning. He was dressed in sweats, a t-shirt, and boat shoes, standard, easily discarded werewolf wardrobe for troubled times. He flipped an untidy mop of black hair out of his eyes and leaned against the SUV's door. "Hey, Harry." "Kirby," I greeted him. "This is my friend, Butters." Kirby nodded to Butters and asked me, "Did you spot me?" "No, but Billy always has someone on watch outside when times are tense." Kirby nodded, his expression serious. "What do you need?" "Park this beast for me. I keep running into things." "Sure. Billy and Georgia are upstairs." I got out of the car and Butters hopped out with me. "Thanks, man." "Yeah," Kirby said. He got in the SUV and frowned. He looked around at all the doors.
"The door is ajar," the dashboard said.
"It won't shut up," I explained to him.
"It gets sort of zen after a while," Butters said brightly. "Life is a journey, time is a river, the door is ajar."
Kirby gave him a skeptical look. I grabbed Butters by the shoulder and hauled him into the building and up to the apartment. Billy opened the door before we even got to it and looked out expectantly. He stepped a bit to one side, holding the door open for us, watching up and down the hallway. "Heya, Harry,"